Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Cards Games Premier Podcasting Duo. I'm Riley Horvath, joined as always by my good friend, Mr. JW Kriwal. JW, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good, Riley. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a hectic couple of weeks for me, so yeah. It's good to be sitting in my own home for, you know, at least 2 weeks in a row is something I'm excited about. But you know, life goes on all the same.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. It's, did you take Monday off
when
you were traveling from London?
Yeah. So Monday I was flying back. So I took that day off just cause I had to, but what I regret and my advice to people who have the flexibility to afford to do this would be to take the day after off. So I flew back. I arrived on Monday, not too late. But I arrived back on Monday, and then I went to work on Tuesday. And then what really tipped me over the edge was on Wednesday, I went to a conference, and it was in Chicago, so we took a bus. It was about a 3-hour ride from work. So I had to wake up really, really early. I was up at like 3 a.m. to get to the bus at 4:30. And then obviously didn't get back till relatively late. And I was standing the whole day and actively doing stuff. And that, like, really pushed me over the edge. Like, if I was already tired from all the stuff over the previous week, doing that, like, completely destroyed me. So I took a sick day today so I could kind of, like, recuperate my state. And I feel, like, 70% of the way there, so.
Okay, well, just give it the weekend.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go into work tomorrow. I think it'll be fine. It might not be beautiful, but it'll be fine. And then I'll have a weekend to, like, actually rest.
Yeah, for sure. That's good stuff, man. Well, I mean, we have a lot to talk about on this episode, and I think Europe is right at the center of it. So tell me about your experience over there and what all happened.
Yeah, I mean, traveling to London, this was a much better experience than my last time in London. For those of you who aren't caught up fully on the lore, I traveled to London for Worlds, of course, and I got COVID on, like, the second day of being in London, so I was bedridden for basically the whole trip, besides one really good Indian dinner. So this time was a significant improvement from that, because I didn't get COVID as far as I'm aware, so at least nothing that's shown up on a test, so that's already an improvement in of itself, and I got to actually enjoy my time there, which was great. Mm-hmm. And the tournament went much better sort of as a consequence of that, I suppose.
Yes.
So that was also a lot of fun. So Andrew and I and Michael Zealy were the three of us from our friend group who were there and really vying for what to play and how we're going to sort things out. And going into the event, I felt pretty solidly like I was going to play a deck that utilized the Lost Zone engine, with maybe Mew as a backup choice. I didn't really like anything else that was on the table. We had all kind of written off Gardy as not the deck that we were going to play. And Lugia was a consideration, but after one day of like in-person testing and one too many coin flip decided games, we took Lugia off the table because we wanted to have a little bit more agency over how our individual games went. So that left us with Lost Zone. Initially, I was most interested in a Forest Seal Stone, Lost Vacuum type of build that turbos out as quickly as possible. That's what I've played by far the most online. If you've hit me on the TCG Live ladder anytime in the weeks leading up to London, you probably saw me playing that deck. So that's where I felt the most comfortable. And after one day of testing, that's where we kind of were. But towards the end of that day, I said, hey, like, does Gudra not seem like a good play right now, you know, given what we're outlying in the meta?
Right.
So I built Gudra that night. We played it the day before the tournament, and it just kind of blew everything out of the water on the table, which led to all three of us playing Gudra in the main event. The logic being that Gudra had a very favorable Lugia matchup. It had a very favorable, like, Lost Zone toolbox type of matchup, and it had a navigable Mew and Gardy matchup, especially like considering the fact that we didn't really consider Guardi to be a major threat. We figured that it would brick often enough that Gudra could win some games, that it seemed like an obvious choice that we would play Gudra. So that's what we did. And it was ultimately, I think it was a successful choice for all three of us who went. Andrew finishing exactly 64th. I finished in the top 256, although I did drop in day two. I could have been top 128, but I wasn't really interested.
You wanted to see the town.
Yeah, I wanted to do like anything else other than play my last three rounds for like a couple championship points and nothing else.
Yeah.
And Michael Zealy finished in the top 256 at 6-3. So he didn't make day two, but he did get the CP.
Yeah.
So 100% hit rate for CP. None of us had less than six wins. I think that's a pretty solid outcome, all things considered.
Yeah, definitely on the average, you know, the good result from the group. So talk a little bit about the list and what were some considerations, kind of the last few cards that you were trying to think about. Obviously, Gudra, you know, you're going to have, you know, your four Comfy. You played the Radiant Greninja. Did you play like three of the Mirage Gate, or were you a little more leaning heavily into Melanie? Like, talk to me a little bit about that. Maybe how many Drapion you played, things like that.
Yeah, we played three Mirage Gate and two Melanie as our sort of energy acceleration. By and large, I think that worked well. I don't think I would really change that. And we played one Drapion, and we thought that was probably enough for the Mew matchup. In hindsight, you know, if I played two, I probably would have had a slightly more successful day two, but that's okay. I don't think it was really the make or break for me.
Yeah.
And really the last, it was, we felt like we had a pretty good skeleton. Like if you look at our list, it's very streamlined and consistent. We play the two Poke Gear to hit our cards more consistently, either the Boss's Orders or the Melanie or the Chorus. Played 4/4 switching cards, the two Beach Court. So really just streamlined, consistent deck, like trying to attack as often as possible on turn two. The one thing that was kind of unique is we opted to play two Choice Belt in our list. That wasn't something that every single Gudra deck was doing. You see, fairly often you'll see one. Sometimes you might even see zero, but we opted for the two. And there's a couple reasons for that. The first is obviously like just hitting for more damage is generally good. Like,
sure.
You know, pressuring basic Vs is noteworthy in of itself. But what really pushed us over the edge on including the second Choice Belt was we thought, hey, we're not the smartest people in the universe. Like other people are going to realize that Gudra is a good play for this tournament.
Right.
And we want to have a slight edge in the mirror. And so playing two Choice Belt guarantees that you're getting a two hit KO in the mirror. Even if you attach it on the second attack. So like having the option to do that more liberally is really valuable in the mirror. In addition to like all the benefits of like if you turn to attack and your opponent has a basic V in play, like you can knock it out. Or if your opponent attacks with a Tyranitar V and doesn't have a V guard on it, maybe they ran out of V guards or they, you know, it's prized or whatever. Then you can KO that for a knockout instantly. So I really liked the two Choice Belt. I think that was one of the best like late game decisions that we had, and it came in clutch a ton of the time.
Sure.
KOing those basic Vs like crazy, and you know it did matter in the mirrors that I did play. So
yeah, totally. I could see that more as a mirror tech. That's kind of how I viewed the second Choice Belt, and it's not really something that I've pushed players toward, but I think your reasoning is, you know, solid enough, right? I think one or two, I think there's great cases for both. And you know, I'm happy it worked out for you guys with the two.
Yeah, we were really looking for kind of a mirror edge, and that's what we landed on. Although I really was KOing basic Vs like crazy over the course of the tournament. You know, the Arceuses and the Lugias and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Those suckers were dropping like flies. So so I was really glad that we played the two Choice Belt.
So without giving me a round by round, just tell me like kind of what your general like matchup spread was and how you fared.
Yeah, day one on the whole went relatively smoothly. I had a really odd day one. I played a lot of decks that I wouldn't have expected to have played. Like I played a Maraidon Flaffy deck, which was quite odd. I ended up tying that, which I was kind of happy with a tie given that the Raichu has an infinite damage output, which is exactly what Gutra doesn't want to see. I played an Arceus Duraludon round one, which was kind of, I was not really expecting a ton of Arceus Duraludon. Obviously, Alex went on to win, but that was even a more Arceus box type of deck than a strictly Arceus Duraludon. And I played a Mirror, and I played another Miraidon deck over the course of the day. So just like not really what I was expecting to see. Still though, like Gudra pulled through relatively well. I felt pretty good in the Arceus matchups. I didn't feel like I was concerned at all in Arceus. And so my two losses were I lost to a Mew where I really just didn't get out of the gates. I don't even think it was necessarily like a judge pass type of thing as much as just my deck didn't really work in those games. And I lost to the straight Miraidon deck. It's actually Robert who later went on to make top eight with his Miraidon Cramorant or Cramomatic deck, which Smoke showed me after some pretty insane like boss's orders plays on game one.
After I heard he beat you and I saw him on stream, I was really pulling for him to make top eight. I'm glad he took a risky ID in that last round.
He did,
but it ended up paying off for him. And I thought he had a pretty decent shot. He was like one coin flip away from beating Alex in the first game, essentially. I thought he had a chance to go deep, but that's neither here nor there. How did day two end up going for you? Because you dropped from day two. I think your record was 7-5-1. Is that what I saw?
Something like that. Yeah, I didn't play super long in day two. I played Alex round one, actually. And I was really close to winning. I forget if I won game one or two. One game I won pretty handily, and the other game I lost where I needed Alex to whiff a boss off of Roxanne, and he was able to draw it. Game three, I attacked really early and swung into an Arceus. He swung into the Gudra for 100, but with a Duraludon and a Vulpix on the bench. I heal the Gudra because Duraludon can knock it out at that point, and I KO the Vulpix. He swings into me with Duraludon, so I have 220 on a Gudra, and I actually have like no more attackers available. I was hoping to draw a Gudra out of the prizes. I had two Gudra prized. I did have access to Drapion potentially, but I didn't have enough energy left in my deck to attack with Drapion realistically, and if he drew a choice spell ever, then I lost. So I ended up scooping game three to Alex, which is kind of brutal. I think there's a world where I win that game, but it ended up leading to Alex winning the tournament.
In alternate reality, it was you that won the tournament.
You know, I don't think, you know, look at the top eight. I think it would have been tough for Gudra to win the whole tournament.
Yes, I agree.
But, you know, I'm happy to see Alex get there, honestly. Like, I was really stoked when I saw the top eight. I was really hoping for Alex to win the whole thing. So, you know, neither here nor there. I was happy for him, you know.
Yeah.
But that was kind of unfortunate.
No, for sure. For sure. Yeah, Gudra was an interesting play because, and like, you know, you and Zeely and Andrew, you all did very well day one. And then generally, you know, I mean, you fell off. Obviously, Zeely didn't make it into day two. And then Andrew had like a solid performance, but not a big spike. It felt like Gudra was a great day one deck. And then you just look at the amount of Lost Zone box in day two. And that meta share is significantly decreased from day one.
Yeah, I mean, Lost Zone Box doesn't seem like it was the play for this tournament. And part of the reason we didn't play it ourselves is we knew that everyone was going in with a game plan against Lost Box, right? They might not have a game plan against Gudra, but they definitely have a game plan against Lost Zone, like Sableye type of decks. And we didn't really want to fall victim to that, which is why we played Gudra ultimately over. We also tried like a goofy Giratina variant. It didn't really work out. So, also, you know, there were a bunch of there were two Gudras in contention for top eight. There were several more in top 32 and even more still in top 64. So I feel like Gudra was a really solid call. I don't regret it at all.
Right.
I think with the information that we had, it was the right deck to pick. But yeah, I lost to Alex. And then from there, I had an okay. I won a game and then I lost two more. I forget the exact details of those games. I think I beat a Lugia and then I lost to a Mew, which came down to like some a slight misplay on my part in one of the games which I'd rather lose to myself making a mistake than like my deck completely failing. So I guess that's fine. Yeah. So yeah, it is. Oh, and I lost to a Guardi V Union.
Sure.
I don't remember a lot of the details of what happened in that game, but they got set up really fast in game two and three and wasn't really a lot I could do.
Yeah, that's just going to be a tough matchup no matter how you slice it.
It came down to, like, if I drew a boss, my last boss, and I remember now, it came down to if I drew my last boss in game three that I would win, and I didn't, obviously. So it is what it is. So, you know, I did end up playing three people who made top eight over the course of the tournament. I played Robert, Eric, and Alex. So even though I didn't have a great, like, final result, I did have a pretty solid, like, slew of people that I played against. So,
yeah, seriously.
I also played Mimoso, who made top 16. So, you know, I had a good resistance. Stacked
tournament. My goodness. Dude.
You know, that's I had a good insane. Resistance out there.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Let's instead shift gears, though, to talk a little bit about the top eight landscape, JW. As someone who was watching from the outside, what was your thoughts as we looked at the top eight and ultimately, like, the final results of the tournament?
Yeah, I saw the top eight, and I was just so excited because of the diversity of decks. I was really telling a lot of people, somewhat jokingly, but somewhat seriously, we had a roundtable podcast a couple weeks ago, that Maraidon was not as bad as people thought. And granted, there was one Maraidon in top eight, and then it was nowhere to be seen pretty much after that. But I do give Robert Kimbrum a lot of credit for coming up with a list that, you know, achieves what the core essence of the deck is trying to do, is get those energy out quick, you know, as fast as possible, and then get attacking turn one. So just props to him. I was really excited to see that. It was great to see Gardevoir live up to some of the hype. I think Torrid certainly setting the precedent for how to build that deck. And that finals match, man, that was one of the best finals that I think maybe I've ever seen. It was just really, really strong. You also saw, of course, Pablo topping with Mew, which I'm happy about. Anytime Mew can show up like that and have a deep run. And I really think Pablo, you know, could have had a shot there as well to win it all. I know obviously Alex had a couple Drapion in his deck, but you know, you can get around that with a well-timed Roxanne path. And then of course we had Gudra, a couple Lugia, Alex with his Arceus deck. I mean, it was just such a nice thing to see the meta be so varied.
There's so much going on in this top eight and this whole tournament. You know, the fact I was able to play such a diverse array of decks speaks to how intricate this format has evolved. I totally agree that Tord sort of set the standard for what Guardi will likely look like going forward. One thing I was curious to ask to you is Alex's deck, right? Alex's deck was clearly a very targeted, like, anti-meta sort of deck. What do you think the evolution of sort of an Arceus deck looks like going forward? Do you continue playing a list that looks like Alex's, or do you look to shake things up as the metagame continues to shift and evolve?
I guess the question would be, what would be the alternate attackers? Because I think you have two of the better attackers right now for the metagame, and even moving forward in Vulpix and Duraludon. I think those open up just a lot of lines of play against a lot of the top decks. That I think the only question I would have is, what are the counts of each of those? Do you shift away from a Duraludon heavy list because Lugia players are, you know, maybe shifting more toward playing single strike Urshifu, or you know, do you play a higher count of Vulpix because maybe some Gardevoir players are now attempting to counter Vulpix with cards like Mimikyu, or heck, even Path of the Peak or Escape Rope, things like that. So I think the two main secondary attackers, the two secondary attackers in Arceus, or in Duraludon and Vulpix, probably are the best choices for the deck. I think that carries on through moving forward here into these you know, locals and the next big majors.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, Duraludon also has the benefit of just blocking special energy, right, and forcing either Duraludon or Urshifu out of the Lugia decks. So that's probably fair. Do you think that there's ever consideration to beef up the Vulpix line? You know, Alex played that 1-1.
Yeah, I think that's like my first inclination, right? It's like what the counts look like. And it, you know, I think just because of how important it is for, you know, a matchup like Guardy, I think you definitely consider maybe a 2-1 line. Would I ever go up to 2-2? I think that's a lot of space to devote, but it certainly is a consideration. I saw the list and I was like, ooh, that seems really good. I think I'd want a second Vulpix.
Yeah. I think the Vulpix is super clutch, and it can be unfortunate that you play such a thin line because it makes it much more susceptible to like unfortunate RNG, if you will, like having one piece prized or like you chorus and you really need the other cards. Right. So you have to get rid of the Vulpix even though you'd like to have it. So consideration at least. I don't think it's like a hard requirement. How about the 2 Drapion? Do you think that's still necessary going forward? We saw Pablo and Paulo making top 16 with Mew and a decent amount beyond that. But is Mew still the prime factor in the metagame?
Well, I think it's good. You know, it's a tech card that in that particular deck is as viable an attacker against Guardy as anything that you, you know, as the Vulpix, right? Because
that's true,
you're able to take those one shots on the EX. So I think it's versatile enough for that deck. Now, you know, maybe a Gudra deck where your energy acceleration isn't as simple, it might not be the best choice, kind of as we were talking about earlier. But I think you have these dark, weak Pokemon, namely the Gardevoir EX, that it makes sense. I get it. I think you probably just keep the two, because if you take out one, if you go down to one Drapion, you'll have no shot in the Mew matchup, just straight up. So at that point, you might as well play zero or two.
I think that's fair. Clearly just a super well like constructed anti-meta type of deck. So props to Alex and his friend group for, you know, figuring out a route there, a little non-traditional route. I feel like that's sort of Alex's calling card, right? Is playing these slightly off base type of decks and having deep runs with them. So I was
he's definitely played, you know, Arceus a lot recently. Just the whole, you know, even dating back to last season. So really great to see him get a win. Congratulations to Alex. This is the first major for him in, you know, something absurd like 13 top eights in major tournaments without a win.
I think it might be 13.
It's so crazy. So really big congrats to him. I know some of his teammates also played the Arceus Duraludon list. Josh Frank finished in the top 64. And there may have been
Michael
one
Bergerac.
Other. With the, Michael Bergerac with the list as well, who finished, I believe, top 32.
Top 16.
Top 16. There you go. So, yeah, really well done by those players as well, just across the board with that list. So clearly their testing group had, you know, fantastic tournament. And I think in those early tournaments, so in a metagame, if you're able to make that right prediction, no one's really prepared for it, you know what you're going to see, then you can make these deep runs. And they did exactly that. And, you know, I think we will see lists adjust. Probably not a great deal, but even just some slight tweaks to Guardy, even some slight tweaks to you know, Lugia can give you a better shot into these kind of counter decks. And I think we'll start to see people go that way. So we'll talk about that in a little bit later.
Awesome. So let's shift gears before we talk about sort of the fallout of EUIC and talk about our card of the day.
Let's hear it.
All right, GW, I got a Pokedex entry for you.
Okay, I'm worried.
All right. It accumulates negative ions in the atmosphere to blast out 10,000 volt lightning bolts.
Magneton.
No.
Dang.
Okay, how about one more Pokedex entry that maybe is going to be a little bit more obvious? Bristles its fur into sharp, needle-like points when enraged. One can hear electricity crackle in its breath when it exhales.
It's a little fur?
Into sharp, needle-like points, yeah.
Oh, Jolteon?
Yeah, it's a Jolteon.
Yeah, nice, I got it.
So my card of the day for this week is Jolteon Gold Star. I was inspired because of how clutch Radiant Greninja was for me all weekend. And the closest like mechanic of yore to a Radiant Pokemon is the Gold Star Pokemon. So, you know, they're all shiny, that you can play one in your deck. They tend to have like above average power level relative to, you know, their basic Pokemon status. And so Jolteon Gold Star was really cool. I think it actually would be something that at least some decks would consider playing, maybe back when Scoop Up Net was legal, especially. And that's once your turn, when you put Jolteon onto the bench, you may put one damage counter on each active Pokemon. So decent ability, especially for the time it was printed. Like, there wasn't a lot of ways to sneak in an extra damage counter. You'll see Jolteon played in some of the top decks back from that era, like 2007, 2008. And Jolteon is a really cool card. You know, the Shining, the Gold Star, like Shining Pokemon are all really, really awesome in my opinion. And Jolteon sticks out to me as one that was above average playable, whereas not every single Gold Star Pokemon is playable to the same degree as the Radiance of today. So That's why I picked Jolteon.
Very cool. Yeah, and there's a Jolteon EX that paired very nicely with the Jolteon Gold Star.
Yeah, I love...
a second bite attack that did more damage for each damage counter of the defending Pokemon. So
I love it when, like, Pokemon synergize with themselves in like a different form, you know?
Yep.
I always think that's a lot of fun. So That's a great example of that. So shout out to Jolteon, shout out to Gold Star Pokemon. And, you know, that's a mechanic I generally enjoy. So I wouldn't hate to see a new iteration of that mechanic in the future. Like the Gold Star Radiant type of thing.
Oh, totally. Totally. Sparkling, maybe. Have they had a sparkling?
Sparkling isn't. I feel like sparkling is a thing. That's.
Now I'm thinking. What else could you do?
Oh, maybe not. Maybe that was like the Japanese translated version of Radiant.
Yes, Pokemon hire me.
There you go. It's building itself up that easy.
That's right.
Awesome. So JW, why don't we go ahead then and thank our sponsor for this week?
Absolutely. The Tag Team Pokemon Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. They are the presenting sponsor of our cast, and we couldn't be happier to rep their products. Riley, I don't even have to ask. I know you were wearing the Manscaped boxers for your deep tournament run in Europe. And
I sure was, yeah.
Yep, and I mean, the results speak for themselves. So they have a ton of great products out. The boxers, Riley is a huge fan of. I love the ear and nose hair trimmer. The beard trimmer is fantastic. There's just a ton of fantastic products. Riley, walk us through a little bit and tell the listeners about the special code that they can get a discount for ordering on manscaped.com.
Absolutely. So like JW said, we're huge fans of their products. I seriously love their boxers. I wear them to every single day one that I play in. And I've had an exceptional hit rate in terms of day twos ever since I started wearing the Manscaped boxers. So that speaks for itself, I think. I've also really been a fan of just how portable and easy to use all of their products are. I was able to bring like all of my grooming kit stuff overseas with very little difficulty and keep myself well, nice, and groomed, which is especially important when you're over in Europe. So if any of that interests you, the good news is that we got the hookup here at Tag Team. So if you head on over to manscaped.com, type in code TAGTEAM, TAGTEAM, at checkout, you will not only get 20% off, but you will not have to pay for shipping and handling. So it's a great deal. And it supports the cast as well. So be sure to head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, and check out some of the awesome products. Use those boxers to empower your day ones. And thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. Okay, JW, well, you already alluded to it, but let's talk about what's next, right? What is ahead for the Pokemon trading card game out of EUIC? There's still several more tournaments that are going to be played in the Scarlet and Violet format before we get to the Paldea Evolved set release. So what do you think the sort of downfall of EUIC, or sort of the downward trend, the fallout. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. The fallout of EUIC is going to look like.
Yeah, I think that we should see a lot of, well, I think, and I've seen it in my locals, that Guardy, you know, again, Tortoise kind of set the precedence on how that's going to look. And I think a lot of players have gotten their hands on his list and are trying it out and realizing, okay, maybe the consistency issues that we had with Guardy, the way we were building it, which was bad, have been solved by the way Tord was building it, which is good. So I think, you know, Guardy is going to be a little bit more of a mainstream deck that we just hadn't really seen before. So I do expect that overall, I don't know, it's hard to say, like, overall meta share for, like, your local meta, because you're going to a cup tomorrow. But I think that should, you know, kind of increase. We'll certainly see it increase in online play. I also think that Lugia just had an absurd day one to day two conversion rate. It just absolutely absurd. It was the second most played deck in day one, second to Lost Box decks by maybe about, I don't know, 5-8 percentage points. And then day two happens and it's like 30%, 25% of the meta.
It was insane.
Just nuts. So while Lugia didn't win, it was the only repeated deck in top eight. Certainly had, you know, solid matchups and it's adaptable. I would expect players to bring Lugia. And that's kind of what I'm telling people if they're, you know, maybe going to a cup and they haven't really tested all that much in this new format. It's like, Lugia's still good. Just chill out. Play a solid Lugia deck and you should do well because you're going to have a chance in every matchup.
Yeah, I would echo both of those sentiments. I think Guardy is one thing that sticks out to me a lot, because if you were to listen back to my early thoughts on the Scarlet and Violet format, you might have noticed that I was really excited about Gardevoir as a concept, but maybe wasn't really bought into the deck, right? It sounded really fun and interesting to play a stage two that has infinite acceleration, and, you know, that's just kind of a fun way to play the game.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that the deck has proven itself is really all people needed to, like, latch onto the deck, right? And play the heck out of it. I certainly have been playing Guardy a lot online since the tournament. And I've been having a blast. So I expect Guardy to really be popular in the coming weeks. Also, just the general accessibility of the cards right now is actually insane. Like, the Guardy deck is very cheap to build, which is in contrast to maybe, like, the top meta decks of yore. Mm-hmm. So, now, discounting the fact that maybe Champions Festival is entering the conversation here, Guardy is very cheap to build right now, so.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I was thinking, too, this was just something that was going in my head while I was watching, you know, the Guardy decks play and a few other things, but I was thinking about the impact that the mini 25th anniversary set has had. And certainly on the Guardy deck, you're looking at Zacian and Mew, like two very, very strong cards for the deck. It's just kind of funny how that mini set of really only 25 playable cards is
pretty good hit rate.
Really solid. Yeah, I know. Seriously, it's super solid for a lot of different decks right now.
Yeah, you also get Kyogre in there. It's you know, very above average set quality.
Exactly. Yep.
So I think Guardy will certainly blow up in popularity. And I would also echo your sentiments on Lugia. Lugia has lost a lot of consistency compared to prior formats, but so have a lot of decks. And Lugia's power ceiling is really hard to match. I think it's what it ultimately comes down to. If Lugia gets set up, it can just blow other decks out of the water.
Yeah.
With its variety of attackers and its high damage ceiling and the bulkiness of a Lugia. It's just really hard to compete with that, so it doesn't surprise me at all that Lugia did so well. I still personally am not a huge fan of the deck, personally. I said personally twice there. I'm still not a huge fan of the deck because I don't love Capturing Aroma and I don't love Mezagoza, but really that shouldn't be a direct turnoff. The deck is great. The deck is powerful, and you're going to sneak in a lot of free turns against a lot of matchups where they set up a little bit slower, or they don't actually do anything on turn two.
Well, you know? And one of the things about Lugia right now is that the format in general has slowed.
Yeah.
It's just slowed by, and not by too much, but I mean, it certainly has slowed a considerable amount. You think of Gardy as being the setup deck, you know, Mew, I think probably the most popular version now, really consistently, is the turbo version. But if you're going first, then it takes them two turns to attack. You know, you're seeing Gudra decks, Lost Box decks sometimes need a little bit more time to get going. So there's a lot of times with Lugia where you can read the wind like once, twice, maybe three times, right? And you're set to go for the rest of the game. So certainly the slower overall metagame and format here has helped Lugia. And, you know, that kind of, like you're saying, sneaking in these wins against maybe other decks that, you know, don't go quite as fast. That's very real and certainly something that I've been seeing in my testing.
100%. And Lugia does set up turn two quite often still. But if it doesn't, there's a lot of games where you're afforded that extra time. So I would agree, like, don't feel turned off by Lugia. It is an exceptionally strong deck right now. And it just has solid matchups. It really does. It hits the right weaknesses, the right numbers to hang with pretty much anything. I will say Gudra felt really, really good against Lugia. That was one of the best parts about playing Gudra, is I felt like the Lugia matchup was hard to lose. But there are ways you can get around that as a Lugia player as well, if you play like an Escape Rope or two.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Escape Rope, I think, is probably something that, you know, should be at least considered if you're expecting Gudra. And then the other thing is I've been liking the single strike Urshifu.
Right, that's Urshifu only, is a problem for
Gudra. Not only a tech for the Gudra, but also, of course, for the Duraludon. So those would be a couple of cards that, you know, if you're thinking about playing Lugia and you're thinking about ways that you can maybe change it up or have better matchups into those decks, those would be what I'd think about.
Yeah, and I'll say that Urshifu is a little bit more straightforward of an inclusion than the Duraludon is. You know, I played against Eric and his Duraludon build. And the Duraludon just forces you to play, you know, it forces you to play the single strike energies, which takes away maybe from other energies that you could be playing instead. And obviously Duraludon's a relatively thick line, whereas Urshifu not only slams through Duraludons and Gudras, but is like a more streamlined version of the deck anyway. So
yeah, totally. And I think the basic V is also just better than...
Definitely. Yeah, that's Duraludon, not a, that's right? Not a tough bar to clear, I don't think. The Duraludon V is a huge downgrade from the Champion's Path one that actually was good.
Right.
Awesome. So, yeah, I think there's tons of stuff going on. I'm excited to see what's ahead. One thing I wanted to ask about is, did you look at all at Sander's stall deck? Do you think there's a future for that?
I think absolutely. I mean, you have a Pokemon that, well, so for those that don't know, the Sander stall deck, I think the core concept, and of course with stall decks, you generally have to have kind of multiple strategies for all the different decks that are out there. But his stall deck was largely based around Penny and specifically Mimikyu V, which has an ability that when you play this Pokemon down onto the field, you can prevent all damage done to it by attacks from your opponent's Pokemon during the next turn or whatever. So you can just loop potentially those Mimikyus over and over and over with Penny. You bring Mimikyu active, Penny up the bench, bring the other Mimikyu active, Penny, you know, do that that loop. So that's kind of the core loop there. And then obviously having a bunch of other just tech cards to stall your opponent, the Mawile with the Tempting Track attack. You have, you know, Regieleki to keep recycling your Silenes and your Palpads and things like this. I mean, I think it's certainly a really interesting deck. Does it have legs in the next format or moving forward, I should say? Yeah, I think so. I mean, he proved that it could work in this format. I don't think anyone's really testing against it. So yeah, I certainly think that this is a deck that, at least for like cups, can go really far. You know, you think about the regional level, certainly a lot of the best players have seen this list and they know what to expect and might make slight modifications to their deck to counteract that. I think like a good example of this would be including a Penny of your own so that you don't get trapped by Mawile in certain situations. But Yeah, I think, you know, can certainly work. I think moving forward, not too many modifications would need to be made, but certainly there's room.
Yeah, it was actually interesting. Andrew played against Sander in day two, and he ended up losing that matchup. But Sander, towards the end of the series, mentioned that he did have a opponent who was really close to beating him with Gudra, and the way he managed to do it, so a little insider information for those of you who are out there and looking how to beat a stall deck, the opponent in that instance used Drapion V to knock out a bunch of his own Pokemon, basically, and then Roxanne Sander. Sander was able to draw out of it, but that was
such a good idea.
Yeah, I thought that was a really clever strategy.
Holy moly.
So if you're ever, I guess like one takeaway I would give to you all after having heard that is try and get creative with your win cons against stall decks. Like, don't try and just overwhelm them with raw speed because they've probably accounted for that. Try and see if you have a different way that you can sort of disrupt their strategy on the face of it. And using Drapion V in that way, I think, is exactly something like that, right? Exactly the kind of strategy that would fit that mold.
Certainly. Certainly. Any other decks that you're thinking are either on the rise or on significant decline? I mean, we talked a little bit about the conversion rate for Lost Box. Does Lost Box still hold like a top spot? And I know there's a lot of different ways to play it, right? You have the turbo version, you have the Charizard version, you maybe could play it with, you know, a V Pokemon, right? Like Gudra, yeah, or Giratina. But Lost Box in general, kind of what are you liking, what are you not liking? Do you think it's still you know, a solid deck and maybe just didn't have the best showing in this tournament, or do you think the format is not shaping up for Lost Box to do particularly well?
I think Lost Box is honestly still a really good deck. I mean, you look at Tord's deck, and it doesn't really have, on the face of it, doesn't have a great Lost Box matchup, especially like those Turbo Sableye type of decks. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Lost Box continue to show up in spades in the future. I think Lost Box does okay versus Lugia. It does okay versus Mew. It does okay versus Gardy. And it can struggle against, like, the Gudras. It can struggle against Lugias that are maybe a little more teched out with, like, the Serena package. And it really struggles against some of those rogue decks that are built to beat it. You know, you look at stall decks. You look at some of these Arceus decks would be a problem. So I think there's still legs on Lost Box. You know, we referenced that Gardy would be on the rise. And a great way to deal with Gardy could be to play Lost Box.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
So as far as variants go, I'm not really sure. I mean, if you look at just the results, it seems like Giratina was a huge loser from this format, which is in contrast to maybe some of the early predictions about Giratina being the S tier deck. But honestly, if there's not a ton of mirrors, then I think Giratina is actually a really solid option. Giratina's downfall is really that it's the worst Lost Zone deck in the mirror.
Yes.
But Giratina's upsides are that you have Giratina in your deck, which has a really awesome V-Star power. And it also can attack for a lot of damage. So if you expect that Lost Zone Box decks are down, I think Giratina stocks go way up, personally.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting to think about. What if, you know, you were going to a cup this weekend, say you had a cup in your hometown. You know, maybe it's Columbus, Ohio. What would you play, knowing what you know now about the meta, having actually played a big tournament in this new metagame? What would you consider?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think the safest deck to play would be Lugia. It is reliable. It has pretty decent matchups across the board, and it gets the job done, right? If I were to play in a cup, since I have my invite now, I would maybe go a little bit crazier with it. You know, I might play something like Sander's deck or a Gardevoir deck. I think probably the best plays are going to be either a Lost Zone Box type of deck or Lugia as sort of a generic catch-all sort of play. And Mew is a good fallback, I would say, but that sort of depends on your local meta's proximity to Drapion V.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
I think Pablo's deck though is really, really solid, really clean.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun too. You know, would I bring that exact list if I were to play Mew? Probably not. Probably a few changes, but it certainly is like nice for the Mew believers out there to know that, yeah, there is viability to this archetype moving forward.
Is what would you play? You know, if you were to play a cup like right now, what would you have?
Yeah, I have played a couple of challenges in the local meta. The first one I played with Mew, and I kind of won it. I didn't win it, but I kind of did. All four players finished with the top four finishers finished with the same record, and it was a win a box. So they gave us the option, obviously not changing any of the seating or anything like that, but they gave us the option to play it out for the pack prizing. And so I finished fourth with my 3-1 record, but I won the playoff. So I got the box. So that was fun. So I played that with Mew. And then I played a challenge on Tuesday with Gardevoir. And no one in that first tournament played much Lost Box. And then I hit two Lost Box players that, I mean, frankly, didn't play particularly well and still just kind of blew me out. So it was, it was an interesting run. I was really excited about Gardevoir. But the thing is that the Lost Box matchup is pretty difficult, no matter how you slice it. So I just will have to see, you know, maybe what I'm feeling, what I think is going to have the most well-rounded chance. I mean, for me right now, it'd be between Lugia, like Lost Box Charizard, something similar to what Pedro played, and then Mew.
I think that makes sense. Pedro's deck is really solid. I was very interested to see that Charizard was one of the premier Lost Box decks in this format. You know, I don't think a lot of people really expected that early on. I think it gained more steam in the last couple of weeks and days, but wasn't something people were really talking about as sort of the premier deck early.
Right. Totally.
Cool. Well, any other messages you want to give to our listeners who are excited about their cups and, you know, coming off the tail end of UIC?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I think this format's really fun. I think it's slowed down enough. We saw this kind of like hyper-consistent Lugia build. Well, I shouldn't say hyper-consistent because obviously every deck is going to brick, but just a generally very consistent Lugia build last format that just dominated. You know, no matter how you looked at the format, it usually came back to just Lugia being the deck. And right now, while Lugia is still very good, it's not quite as consistent. It's a little bit slower. Everything's a little bit slower. The format feels really good. There's a lot of different things you can play. I expect that to kind of whittle down just a little bit as we continue to progress through this format. But the format feels much, much better, in my opinion, than it did last format. You have games that are, you know, more decision-making in games. You have stage twos. You have a lot more draw potential with the, you know, Guardy deck. And you have these counter decks that are arising that it's just really cool. I think it's a lot of fun in this format. So totally enjoy it. Enjoy one of the, you know, the good formats, I would say. I mean, even early, I can tell that this is going to be a good format. So enjoy one of these. I feel like it's been a little while since we've had a format as nice as this one.
I agree. I also think it's worth noting that Lugia lost a lot of the things that made it feel unfair, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like it lost Stoutland, it lost Raikou, it lost Evelve.
Yeah, like that. Now they actually have to work for it.
Right, like they have to play the same game as you. You know.
Yeah, certainly.
Not setting up checkmate on turn two. So. Yeah, I totally agree. This format's a lot of fun. I'm really excited for the direction of the game heading forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to continue to play what we got on the tables right now.
Yeah, should be good.
So if you're all interested to continue to keep up with the cast and how this game continues to evolve, especially because this meta is so varied, probably want to check us out on Twitter. You can find the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon. You can find myself at Smiles of Riles, and you can find JW at Real John Walter. We also record the podcast live every single week. typically on Wednesdays at 9:30 Eastern. Not this week because of the, you know, the conference and the travel and all that. But typically Wednesdays at 9:30 Eastern, and you can find that at twitch.tv/Munner or twitch.tv/FlexDaddyRighteous, depending on who is streaming that particular day. We appreciate you all so much for the listenership and support. It's awesome getting to see you all at events and feel the love that you all have for the tag team. And we'll catch you all next time. Peace.
See ya.